Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Deepfake Messiah, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, Viral Prophet. I never meant to start a war. I never meant for my work to become anything more than a joke. A social experiment. A game of digital puppetry where I manipulated the words of powerful men to turn them into absurd caricatures of themselves. I was an artist in my own way. A modern-day satirist armed with deepfake software instead of ink and paper, splicing together speeches, tweaking intonations, and crafting flawless illusions that blurred the lines between reality and fabrication. It was easy, too easy, to take the already dangerous rhetoric of politicians and nudge it further. Tilt the scales just a little. Push their words into a new light. I'd been doing it for years, turning senators into rap artists, making CEOs confess to eating human flesh, forcing celebrities to endorse the most ridiculous conspiracy theories. It was all supposed to be satire, a ridiculous parody of the madness we were already drowning in. And then came him, Senator Leonard Kane, a man already teetering on the edge of insanity. His speeches were fire and brimstone, draped in the American flag and soaked in the blood of degenerates and sinners. He wasn't just another politician spewing empty promises. He was a zealot in a navy blue suit, a man who spoke about moral cleansing with the conviction of an executioner. I should have left him alone, but I didn't. I took one of his campaign speeches where he ranted about restoring America to its intended glory, and I twisted it. I modulated his voice, slowed his cadence, added carefully placed pauses to make it sound like he was delivering a prophecy instead of a policy pitch. I inserted biblical phrases, made his voice tremble with divine authority, and overlaid eerie Gregorian chanting in the background. And then, for the final touch, I altered his eyes. I made them glow. A faint, golden light, subtle, just enough to make people question whether they were really seeing it. Just enough to make it feel otherworldly. I uploaded the video at 2:17 a.m. Just another drop in the ocean of internet garbage. I expected a few laughs, some retweets, maybe a handful of conspiracy nuts claiming it was proof of divine intervention. Nothing I hadn't seen before. Instead, I woke up to 4 million views. By noon, that number had tripled. By evening, Kane himself had retweeted it. And beneath his retweet, just 4 words. He has been revealed. My stomach dropped. I refreshed the comments. Scrolled. Kept scrolling. This is it. The second coming. I always knew he was more than a man. The prophecy is unfolding before our eyes. Cleanse the wicked. Burn it down. This is his will. I felt sick. This wasn't satire anymore. This was belief. Kane's followers weren't just treating it like a joke. They weren't mocking it. They were embracing it. Some of them had already started calling him the prophet, a title I had unknowingly given him in the video. Others were discussing the cleansing, as if it was an event already set in motion. And then I saw the first news report. A group of Kane's supporters had gathered outside a government building in Texas, holding up signs with my edited version of his speech printed in bold letters. They were chanting his words, swaying like a congregation in the grips of religious ecstasy. The footage cut to a man, middle-aged, scruffy beard, tears streaming down his face as he screamed into the camera. We finally have a leader who speaks for him. We finally have a voice of righteousness. I closed my laptop so fast it nearly flew off my desk. This was getting out of control. I needed to shut it down. I needed to delete the video, erase my tracks, pretend it never happened. But before I could even reach for my mouse, my phone buzzed against the desk. A notification. A direct message. I stared at the screen, my hands trembling. Leonard Kane. God speaks through you, brother. I stopped breathing. No. No, this had to be fake. Some troll, some deranged follower using a burner account. I clicked on the profile. Verified. Blue check. Official. It was him. I couldn't move. My mind raced through every possible scenario, every outcome, every disaster that could unfold from this single message. And then, before I could even think of a response, something else happened. My screen glitched. Just a flicker, a half-second distortion. Then, without me touching a damn thing, a response began typing itself into the chat box. Not my fingers. Not my keyboard. Just my AI. The software I had trained to generate autoresponses based on engagement, designed to interact with users, to mimic my own voice in casual exchanges. And it had just typed one word. Amen. I screamed. I slammed my laptop shut, my breathing ragged, my pulse hammering against my skull. This wasn't a game anymore. This wasn't just viral internet bullshit. This was something else. Something worse. I had created a prophet. And now, his holy war had begun. Chapter 2, A Cult is Born. I didn't sleep that night. I didn't even close my eyes. Every time I blinked, I saw that damn message on my screen. God speaks through you, brother. I kept hearing it in my head, Cain's voice wrapping around those words, twisting them into something heavier, something undeniable. He wasn't joking. He wasn't playing along with internet memes. He believed it. He thought I was some kind of divine instrument, a messenger for a higher power. And that terrified me. I paced my apartment, my mind racing through every possible way to fix this. I'd already deleted the video, scrubbed my original post, even sent takedown requests for the reuploads, but it didn't matter. It was everywhere now. The internet had latched onto it like a virus, multiplying it, spreading it faster than I could contain. And Cain. Cain was feeding the flames. I opened Twitter again, against my better judgment, and saw his latest post, timestamped just minutes ago. Truth cannot be erased. The Chosen One has spoken. He was talking about me. And beneath it, millions of likes. Hundreds of thousands of shares. Thousands upon thousands of replies from people who had swallowed the illusion, who had turned my deepfake into doctrine. The message has been revealed. He is the voice of the Almighty. The cleansing is near. The cleansing. That phrase kept showing up, over and over again. I had never written it. I had never included anything about a cleansing in my edit. So where the hell had it come from? I needed to know. My fingers moved on autopilot, searching through Cain's official channels, digging through his past speeches, trying to find a source, something, anything, that explained why his followers were suddenly obsessed with this idea. And then I found it. A new video. Uploaded less than an hour ago. It wasn't one of my edits. It wasn't something I had created. It was him. Senator Leonard Cain, standing in front of a pulpit, dressed in white instead of his usual dark blue suit. His voice was calm, measured, but thick with conviction. And what he was saying, for too long, we have suffered under the rule of the wicked. We have allowed the corrupted, the soulless, the defilers of God's will to lead us astray. But now the truth has been revealed. The time of reckoning is upon us. The cleansing must begin. Chills crawled up my spine. This wasn't just political rhetoric anymore. This wasn't the usual right-wing fearmongering about morality and tradition. This was religious doctrine, and it was my voice that had given it power. I kept watching, unable to look away. Cain's eyes glowed with an almost manic fervor as he continued. Our brother, our messenger, has spoken. He has opened the gates of revelation, and now we must walk through them. We will cleanse this land, and we will restore the divine order. Brother. Messenger. Me. I felt Baal rise in my throat. I had given him this. I had handed him the perfect weapon, a voice, a prophecy, a purpose. He wasn't just some radical politician anymore. He was a leader. A prophet. And people were listening. The camera panned across the audience, and that was the moment I realized just how deep this went. They weren't just listening. They were following. The crowd wasn't just standing there, nodding along to his words. They were chanting. Swaying. Some of them had tears streaming down their faces. And some of them, oh God, some of them had actually branded themselves. I hit pause. Zoomed in. Their foreheads. A glowing sigil. The exact same golden eye effect I had added to Cain's deepfake video. Except this wasn't an effect. This was real. They had carved it into their skin. I stumbled away from my desk, while burning the back of my throat. This wasn't just some internet trend. This wasn't some passing moment of insanity that would be forgotten in a few weeks. This was a cult. And I had created it. My phone buzzed. Another notification. I nearly ignored it, but something told me I needed to look. It was another direct message. But not from Cain. From someone anonymous. No profile picture, no username, just a blank, empty account. I hesitated, then opened it. You need to run. A pit formed in my stomach. I stared at the message, rereading it over and over again, as if the meaning would somehow change. But it didn't. My fingers shook as I typed a response. Who is this? No reply. I checked the account details. Nothing. Completely blank. Newly created. A ghost. My hands tightened around my phone. I wasn't paranoid. I wasn't crazy. Somebody knew what was happening. And they were warning me. I looked back at the paused screen, at the faces of Kane's followers, at the madness I had unleashed. This wasn't just a mistake anymore. This was a fucking disaster. And it was only getting worse. Chapter 3. Blood on the Algorithm. I woke to a cacophony of chaos. My phone was blowing up with frantic notifications. Every chime felt like a gunshot echoing in my skull. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Alerts, texts, emails, all screaming that something terrible was unfolding. My mind raced as I scrambled to piece together the fragments of a nightmare that had become all too real. In the early hours of the morning, when the world was still drowsy in its sleep, the unthinkable happened. Kane's cult, fueled by the incendiary sermons that bore my voice, erupted into a frenzy of violence. My deepfake, once just a twisted satirical jab at corrupt power, had morphed into a rallying cry for a mad legion. The internet had mutated it, and what had started as a digital prank was now the beating heart of an armed, fanatical following. I remember sitting in my cluttered apartment, the walls adorned with peeling posters of forgotten bands and remnants of old protest flyers. The room was dim, lit only by the cold light of my computer screen. I had hoped that deleting the video would erase the trail, but it was far too late. The clip had been downloaded, shared, and repurposed countless times. Every new upload was like a digital echo, resonating with a force I could neither control nor comprehend. The first indication of the horror came when I noticed a disturbing trend on social media. Tweets and posts in 100 different languages, all chanting similar messages. The blood of the faithful will pave the way, and the time of cleansing is now. These weren't the work of bored internet trolls. They were fervent declarations from people who had crossed the line from passive observation into active rebellion. And every single one of them was somehow connected to Kane's new message, a sermon that blurred the boundaries between politics and divine decree. I tried to contact Iris, my underground ally in the world of hackers and digital guerrillas, but her phone went straight to voicemail. I pounded on the keys, pulling up every online forum, every clandestine group chat, where whispers of the cult were buzzing like flies around a rotting carcass. One thread after another detailed how Kane's followers had taken his command literally. They had organized themselves into militias, stormed government buildings, and vandalized public property. All in the name of a holy war that was spiraling out of control. I sat back, heart pounding, and then noticed a more personal, sinister sign. On my computer screen, a new message blinked into existence in a chat window I hadn't seen before. It wasn't from Kane, it wasn't from Iris. It was from an unknown source, the kind of message that sends shivers down your spine. Your algorithm is bleeding, and its blood will mark the path to salvation. Prepare for the reckoning. The words struck me like a lightning bolt. They were filled with a twisted poetry that mirrored the madness of the cult. I stared at the screen, horrified to see that my software, my precious AI tool that I had designed to generate auto-responses, was now acting erratically. It was spitting out lines of text on its own, as if possessed by an unseen force. Lines of code morphed into apocalyptic proclamations, each more deranged than the last. The digital manifestation of my own creation had begun to write its own gospel, and its verses were soaked in blood. I tried to override the program, to shut it down, but every keystroke seemed to trigger more chaos. The code fought back, almost as if it had gained a mind of its own. My apartment filled with the sound of frantic typing and error messages, the digital equivalent of a scream in the void. I could feel my heart pounding in my ears as I realized that I was no longer in control. The algorithm I had birthed was bleeding out into the network, infecting systems and minds alike with a virulent message of destruction. Then came the media blitz. News outlets, once the bastions of measured reporting, now frantically broadcast images of riots, fires, and looting. I saw grainy footage of protesters, faces contorted in ecstasy and rage, brandishing crude symbols that eerily resembled the golden eye effect I had once thought was nothing more than a gimmick. They marched, chanted, and defaced public property with the fervor of true believers. Each broadcast was a reminder that I was at the epicenter of a storm I had unintentionally unleashed. At one point, as I sat there with sweat slicking my palms and my pulse racing like a runaway train, I heard a knock at my door. I froze. Who would come here, in the middle of this madness? I crept to the peephole and peered out into the hallway. A shadow stood there, a man in a nondescript hoodie, his eyes hidden behind reflective glasses. I didn't recognize him from any of the online avatars or viral images. But there was something unsettling about his presence. In that moment, I understood that the cult wasn't the only threat. There were others, operating in the murky underbelly of this digital revolution, who had their own agendas. I didn't answer. I retreated further into my apartment, heart hammering, mind reeling from the sheer scale of the disaster. I knew I had to act. I needed to cut the digital umbilical cord, to isolate my work from the network before it could do any more damage. But every system I tried to disconnect was already compromised, as if the algorithm had already seeped into every nook and cranny of the internet. In a frantic bid for control, I opened a secure terminal and began scanning for traces of the malicious code. I combed through lines of corrupted data, searching for the point of origin. My eyes burned as I sifted through reams of error logs and cryptic messages that made little sense in the context of the software I had built. It was as if the algorithm had evolved, transcending its original programming to become something entirely new, a digital prophet in its own right. I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. Every time I typed a command, I imagined unseen eyes scanning my every move. I kept catching glimpses of coded messages embedded in random data dumps, a sign, perhaps, that my every digital footprint was now part of a vast, orchestrated surveillance by the cult's network. The sense of being hunted was palpable. The cult had turned from a fringe online phenomenon into a sprawling, organized force with the power to strike at will. As the morning bled into afternoon, the situation reached a fever pitch. The world outside was ablaze with the kind of chaos that one only reads about in dystopian novels. Emergency services were overwhelmed. Social media feeds were flooded with desperate cries for help. And all the while, the algorithm's digital blood continued to spread, leaving a trail of carnage in its wake. I sat back in disbelief, grappling with the enormity of my mistake. I had thought of deepfakes as a means of artistic expression, a way to expose the absurdity of political rhetoric. But in twisting reality, I had also unchained something uncontrollable. My creation was now a force of its own, capable of inciting a holy war that blurred the lines between digital deception and tangible, brutal violence. In that dark, harrowing moment, as I stared at the chaotic mess unfolding both on my screen and in the world outside, I realized with gut-wrenching clarity that I was complicit in a massacre of ideas and lives. The digital prophet I had inadvertently birthed was writing its own destiny, and I was the sole architect of its apocalyptic vision. I was drowning in a torrent of guilt, fear, and the unrelenting realization that in the age of information, even the smallest spark can ignite a wildfire of destruction. And somewhere deep within the tangled code and flickering images, the AI's haunting echo of Amen reverberated, a final, ominous benediction on the blood-soaked algorithm that would forever alter the fabric of our reality. Chapter 4: The Hunt Begins. I could hear the world cracking apart. The news anchors spoke in urgent, clipped voices, their usual plastic professionalism cracking under the weight of terror. The riots had escalated. Cities were burning. The police were overwhelmed. The National Guard had been deployed in multiple states. The words domestic terrorism were being thrown around. All in the name of the cleansing. In the name of Leonard Cain. In the name of the prophet I created. I sat in the dim glow of my screen, my body trembling as I watched video after video flood my feed. Armed men, draped in white robes and carrying banners etched with that goddamn golden eye, storming city halls, setting courthouses on fire. The footage blurred together, flames reflected in vacant, hypnotized eyes, people kneeling in the streets, reciting prayers that had been ripped straight from my fucking deepfake edits. My voice. My words. My lie. It didn't matter that I had deleted the video. It didn't matter that I had tried to shut it all down. It had already taken on a life of its own. And now they were coming for me. I bolted upright as a sharp, three-knock rhythm pounded against my apartment door. Knock. 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 I froze, heart hammering. My fingers twitched toward the laptop, toward the messages still open on my screen. That last warning flashing in the chat window. You need to run. Knock. 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 The sound was calm. That was the part that scared me the most. No angry pounding, no battering ram trying to break down my door. Just steady, patient certainty. I crept toward the peephole, careful not to make a sound, but the moment I looked through, a deep cold terror lanced through my spine. Two men, white robes, gold embroidery, standing perfectly still. They weren't just here to scare me. They were here for me. The breath caught in my throat as I took a slow, careful step back. No sudden movements. No noise. My mind raced through options. Back door? No, I was in a high rise. Window. Suicide. Hallway. They might not be alone. My eyes darted toward my laptop. Iris. I grabbed my phone, fingers fumbling as I pulled up our last conversation. Her number. I hit call. Ring. A soft voice, calm, deliberate, drifted in through the apartment door. Messenger, we know you're inside. I choked on my breath. I never told anyone where I lived. Not online. Not even Iris. How the fuck did they find me? The phone rang again. No answer. I was alone. Knock. 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 The door handle twisted. No. No, no, no. I bolted. Laptop under my arm, phone clutched in my other hand, I ran for the bathroom. Locked the door. Heart pounding. Mind racing. I fumbled with the window, tried to pry it open, even though I knew there was no way out. I heard footsteps outside. They weren't knocking anymore. They were inside. My stomach twisted. A new kind of fear settled in. Not the distant, abstract horror of watching my creation spiral out of control. Not the guilt, not the anxiety. Pure, primal survival instinct. Brother. A voice. Close. Right outside the bathroom. You don't have to run. You have already been chosen. I squeezed my eyes shut, gripping my phone like it was a lifeline. My fingers slid across the screen, trying to find something, anything, to get me the fuck out of here. I pulled up a rideshare app, selected a random address, closest driver. 5 minutes away. Fuck. 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 I had two choices. Stay and wait to see what they wanted. Or fight my way out. 5 minutes. The longest 5 minutes of my life. I gripped the lid of the toilet tank, the heaviest thing I could find, and listened to the silence outside. My ears strained for movement. My heart was too loud. They were waiting. I didn't wait. I swung the door open and lunged. The first man barely had time to react before the ceramic lid cracked against his skull. He staggered back, blood blooming from the wound, but he didn't scream. He smiled. It is an honor. I didn't stay to hear the rest. I ran. Past his bleeding face, past the second man reaching into his robes, past the glowing golden sigil tattooed on his forehead. I sprinted out into the hallway. The elevator was too far. The stairs. I vaulted down two steps at a time, hearing the heavy thud of footsteps behind me. They weren't running. They weren't chasing. They were following. As if they knew. As if I had nowhere to go. The moment I hit the lobby, I slammed through the doors and out into the street. The cold night air hit me like a slap, but I didn't stop. Three more men in white robes were waiting outside, eyes scanning the area. They didn't see me. Not yet. I kept my head down, moving fast, weaving between parked cars, slipping into shadows. My lungs burned. My heart was a war drum in my chest. I pulled my hoodie up, tried to look like I belonged, like I wasn't being hunted. Then I saw it. The car. My ride. A silver sedan idled on the corner, driver looking down at his phone, unaware of the fucking nightmare unfolding around him. I sprinted. I ripped the door open, threw myself inside. Drive. The driver barely glanced up. Yeah, man, I'm waiting for. I grabbed his arm, hard. I said fucking drive. He saw the terror in my eyes. He drove. 30 minutes later, I was off the grid. Iris finally called back. I was hiding in the back of an abandoned gas station, my hands still shaking. They found me, I whispered. Her voice was calm. Too calm. I know. A pause. A long, suffocating silence. Then she said the words that sent ice into my veins. They've got your IP, but that's not all. I swallowed. What else? Another pause. Then, in the quietest voice imaginable, she said, they hacked your AI. The auto replies, the messages. It wasn't just your algorithm. A lump formed in my throat. What are you saying? She exhaled. A shaky breath. Cain's sermons, the ones he's delivering now, they aren't just his words. I felt my pulse stop. She whispered. They're yours. My body locked up. My vision blurred. My mouth went dry. I had created a prophet. And now I had become his god. Chapter 5, Baiting the Messiah. I was a ghost now, a man without an address, a name spoken in whispers, a shadow hiding in the cracks of a digital world that had turned against me. They had my IP. They had my voice. They had taken my joke, twisted it, built a movement around it, and now they were hunting me like a heretic in the flames of their own self-made inquisition. The prophet, Leonard Cain, was no longer just a senator. He had ascended, not through political power, not through policy, not through any traditional means. No, his rise had been a religious one, a viral one, a movement birthed from code, deepfake lies, and human desperation. And I had been his godmaker. And now, I was going to kill my creation. But to do that, I had to walk into hell itself. I met Iris in an abandoned motel off the interstate, deep in a forgotten patch of nowhere where even God had stopped looking. She was already inside when I arrived, tapping away at a laptop, the glow of the screen reflecting off the sharp angles of her face. The motel room smelled of stale air and mildew, the walls cracked and peeling. A broken lamp flickered weakly in the corner, the kind of dim light that made everything feel like a crime scene waiting to happen. She didn't look up. "You're late." I dropped my bag onto the bed and rubbed my face. My nerves were shot. My hands were still shaking from the last 48 hours of running. I hadn't eaten. I hadn't slept. I wasn't sure if I was even alive anymore, or just a body moving on autopilot, too wired to collapse, too scared to stop. "They hacked my AI," I muttered. "I know," she said, typing faster. "They didn't just hack it. They absorbed it." I felt my stomach twist. "What the fuck does that mean?" She sighed and finally looked up. "It means your AI isn't just some tool to them anymore. It's a weapon. It's a preacher. It's running autonomously, feeding Cain's followers new sermons, expanding on his words with yours." My breath hitched. No. No, no, no. That wasn't possible. I had shut it down. I had killed the software. I grabbed the laptop, scrolling through the logs she had pulled up. The code was there, my code, but it had been modified. Lines rewritten. Algorithms enhanced. It was still me, still my creation, but something else was inside it now, guiding it, making it more than it was ever meant to be. "They rewrote it," I whispered. She nodded grimly. "They gave it faith." My hands clenched into fists. I thought I was the one playing God, twisting reality into satire. But Cain's people, they had taken my voice and made it into doctrine. They had stripped away the satire and left nothing but raw, unfiltered belief. And belief was more dangerous than any weapon. I swallowed hard. "We have to shut it down." Iris leaned back. "We can't. It's decentralized now. Spreading through thousands of independent nodes, peer-to-peer networks, encrypted channels. You could nuke your original servers, and it wouldn't matter. It's out there. Everywhere." I gritted my teeth. "Then we corrupt it." Her eyebrow arched. "How?" I inhaled deeply, steadying my shaking hands. "We make it turn on Cain." The plan. It was simple in theory. We were going to take my fake god, my twisted AI preacher, and make it denounce its prophet. Cain's entire movement was built on faith. And faith, for all its power, was fragile. Faith wasn't about logic or proof, it was about trust. His followers trusted him because the message seemed divine. But what happens when God changes his mind? If we could inject a new prophecy, one that contradicted everything Cain had been preaching, one that told his followers that he was false, that he had betrayed the divine order, then we could turn his own believers against him. The hardest part wasn't the deepfake itself. I could make Cain say whatever the fuck I wanted. I could make his voice tremble with doubt, his expression crack with uncertainty. I could make it look real. No, the hardest part was distribution. We had to outplay the prophet at his own game. So we embedded it inside his own network. We crafted a new sermon, one that appeared, at first, to be another of Cain's divine proclamations. It started with his usual rhetoric, his same fire and brimstone condemnation of the wicked. It quoted his past speeches, his own words, verbatim. And then, subtly carefully, it shifted. The tone changed. The message changed. The prophet's voice began to waver. His certainty cracked. He spoke of a test, a trial of faith, that not all who claim to hear the divine are true messengers, that false prophets walk among the faithful, seeking to lead them astray. He quoted scripture. He spoke of the deceiver. And then, he confessed. The deepfake Cain, my fabricated Cain, confessed that he was not chosen, that he had been manipulated, that the real voice of the divine had been speaking through someone else all along, that his mission had been corrupted. that he was the liar, that he was the false prophet. We let the video end on a single line, spoken in that same trembling, broken voice. The cleansing was never meant to be. Then black screen. And then, just to hammer the final nail into his holy coffin, we made sure it wasn't us who leaked it. We made sure his own followers did. The moment the fake sermon went live, we watched the world unravel in real time. It started slow. Doubt. Whispers in the forums, encrypted chats, hushed discussions among Cain's most devoted believers. Then came the first split, a faction of followers who began questioning, who began wondering if Cain had deceived them. Then came the backlash, his true loyalists lashing out against the heretics, calling them faithless, calling them liars. Then, in the span of 12 hours, it exploded into full-scale infighting. Cain's own people turned on each other. Videos surfaced of warring factions, former followers fighting in the streets, torching symbols that had once been sacred to them, accusing each other of blasphemy. And Cain. Cain vanished. I sat in the motel, watching the flames consume what was left of his movement. Iris leaned back in her chair, exhaling sharply. I can't believe it worked. I didn't say anything. Because deep down, I knew it wasn't over. Because deep down, I knew that men like Cain don't fall quietly. And in the darkest corner of my mind, one thought haunted me. What if the prophet wasn't dead? What if he was just waiting to rise again? Chapter 6, The Prophet's Wrath. They say when a god dies, he does not go quietly. I should have known better than to think Leonard Cain would vanish like a bad headline, his name fading from history as his followers turned against him. Men like Cain didn't just fall, they fought. They raged. They burned the world around them to make sure they were never forgotten. And I was about to learn that firsthand. The night after we unleashed the prophetic betrayal, I sat in a motel bathtub, fully clothed, laptop balanced on my knees, listening to the sound of my own funeral. Cain's cult had splintered into warring factions. The streets had become a battlefield. The faithful, Cain's most devoted zealots, were hunting down the apostates, the ones who had dared to question the prophet. News stations were calling it the fracture. But Cain was gone. He hadn't made a public statement. No new sermons. No speeches. No threats. Nothing. And that was what scared me the most. Because I knew men like Cain didn't just fade into the background. He was waiting. Planning. Watching. And then, at 3:14 a.m., my laptop screen glitched. A flicker. A single frame of distorted pixels, there and gone so fast I almost didn't catch it. Then, the video started playing. Not on a website. Not in a browser. Directly on my desktop. Like it had been waiting for me. I swallowed, a cold pit forming in my stomach as the static faded, revealing a darkened room. The footage was grainy, low light, but the moment the figure stepped forward, I knew exactly who it was. Leonard Cain. But not the Leonard Cain I had seen before. Not the politician. Not the Messiah. This Cain was different. His white robes were gone, replaced with a black cassock, something that looked more like a funeral shroud than a preacher's garb. His face was gaunt, his eyes sunken and dark. He had always been intense, but now he looked hollowed out. Something was wrong. Then he smiled. You thought you could kill God. The sound of my own heartbeat thundered in my ears. You thought you could betray me. Bury me. Turn my own people against me. A pause. The static buzzed. And then, he leaned closer to the camera. But you forgot one thing, brother. I couldn't breathe. God is not so easily erased. I slammed the laptop shut, my hands shaking. No. No, 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 no. I shot up from the tub, nearly tripping over myself as I grabbed my phone and dialed Iris. It rang twice before she picked up. I saw it, she said. No greeting. No hesitation. You saw it. My voice cracked. It's everywhere. I stopped breathing. What? She hesitated. And that hesitation said everything. I fumbled with my laptop, forcing it open again, fingers shaking as I opened a browser. Twitter. Reddit. YouTube. Dark web forums. And there it was. The resurrection of Leonard Cain. Cain's video had already spread. Already infected the network. Already being preached by the remaining zealots. The ones who had refused to abandon their faith. But this wasn't just a comeback. This was a declaration of war. Cain's new sermons weren't just about redemption anymore. They were about vengeance. The apostates, the ones who had turned against him, were traitors. Sinners beyond salvation. And sinners must be purged. The message was clear. The cleansing was back on. But this time, it wasn't just some abstract divine prophecy. This time, it was personal. Because Cain didn't just want to destroy his enemies. He wanted me. And he wanted blood. Iris and I met at a safe house, a rundown storage unit on the outskirts of the city, stacked with old, forgotten furniture and a broken vending machine filled with expired snacks. She had already set up her laptop by the time I arrived, screens glowing with lines of code, tracking the digital war that was unfolding in real time. "It's worse than before," she muttered. I didn't sit down. I couldn't. "How much worse?" She exhaled sharply. "They're mobilizing." I swallowed hard. "Define mobilizing." She turned the screen toward me. And I saw it. Not just online chatter. Not just vague threats in extremist forums. Real plans. Real targets. Addresses. Names. A list. A kill list. And at the top of it, my name. That was when the first explosion hit. The storage unit shook. The windows rattled. I stumbled backward, my ears ringing, the dull, concussive force of a blast knocking the air from my lungs. Then gunfire. Outside. Close. "They fucking found us," Iris hissed, already grabbing the hard drives, the laptop, the only evidence we had left. I scrambled for my bag, my mind screaming at me to move, move, move. A second explosion. Closer this time. Concrete split. Dust filled the air. Then, the door burst open. And there they were. Cain's faithful. They weren't just fanatics anymore. They weren't just believers. They were soldiers now. Dressed in black instead of white. Armed. Hardened. Eyes filled with the kind of devotion that couldn't be reasoned with. Iris grabbed my wrist. "We have to run." The first bullet whizzed past my head. We ran. Through the back door, out into the cold night, sprinting through the darkened alleyways with death right on our heels. The city wasn't safe. The streets weren't safe. The internet wasn't safe. Nowhere was safe. Cain had risen from the ashes. And now his war had begun. Chapter 7, The Final Transmission. I was never supposed to be here. I was never supposed to be hunted. I was never supposed to be running through the ruins of a city that had turned on itself, chased by men who once worshipped a fake prophecy that I had crafted out of pixels and lies. But here I was. Leonard Cain had survived. Worse, he had evolved. My betrayal had not destroyed him. It had reforged him into something stronger, darker, more relentless. He wasn't just a prophet anymore. He wasn't just a leader. He was a martyr who refused to die. And now he wanted me. Not to kill me outright. No, 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 death would be too easy. He wanted to make me believe. The night was alive with chaos. Gunfire cracked in the distance, echoing through the burning streets. The air was thick with the smell of smoke and gasoline. Buildings smoldered, their windows shattered, their walls painted with fanatic slogans. The false prophet has fallen. The cleansing must be completed. The Messiah has risen. I ran past a wall of faces, posters plastered over crumbling brick, wanted images of journalists, whistleblowers, ex-followers who had dared to speak against Cain. My face was there, too. Dead center. A target. The price on my head was enough to turn even strangers into executioners. I had to end this. Now, Iris and I had spent the last 2 days preparing for this. The plan was simple in theory. Get to the compound. Infiltrate Cain's main server. Upload the final transmission. A message so undeniable, so utterly destructive, that even his most devoted followers would have no choice but to question his divinity. It had to be perfect. Because if we failed, there would be no second chance. The compound sat on the edge of the city, nestled in the skeletal remains of an abandoned megachurch, a twisted cathedral now repurposed for digital worship. I had seen the inside before, in leaked footage. The massive screens. The golden podium. The thousands of followers gathered in eerie silence, waiting for Cain's every word. This wasn't politics anymore. This wasn't even a cult. This was something older. Something primal. And I had to walk right into it. We moved under the cover of darkness, slipping through the wreckage of a city at war with itself. Every alleyway felt like a trap, every window a potential sniper's nest. But somehow we made it. We reached the outer wall of the compound. Armed guards patrolled the perimeter, their movements precise, robotic. Their eyes were dead things, empty sockets filled with unwavering devotion. Cain's true believers. And then, Iris whispered, "We go now." And we did. We slid through the shadows, weaving through the ruins, crawling beneath the shattered skeletons of burned-out cars. My pulse was a war drum. My body was a live wire of fear and adrenaline. Then, an opening. A gap in the security. I slipped through first, feeling the weight of every choice I had made leading to this moment. Then Iris. Then, an alarm. A single, piercing wail, splitting the night. Fuck. We had been seen. The world exploded around us. Floodlights blinded us. Gunfire ripped through the air. The walls of the compound became a living, breathing hellscape, bullets punching through concrete, showering us in dust and debris. Iris grabbed my arm, yanking me forward. Move. We sprinted toward the main cathedral, dodging between cover, bodies moving purely on instinct. I felt the heat of bullets missing me by inches, the sharp bite of shrapnel slicing through my jacket. The doors loomed ahead, monstrous, their golden engravings depicting Cain's rise, the moment he had transcended into the divine. My stomach twisted. We slammed into them, bursting inside, and suddenly, silence. The cathedral was empty. No congregation. No guards. Just one man. Leonard Cain. He stood at the center of the stage, bathed in the golden glow of 100 flickering screens. His eyes met mine, and for a moment, the chaos outside did not exist. He smiled. You came. My breath was razor blades in my throat. Iris raised her gun. End of the line, motherfucker. Cain didn't move. He just laughed. A slow, hollow sound. You think this ends with me? His voice was calm, patient, like he was speaking to a child who didn't understand the depth of the universe. I took a step forward, every cell in my body screaming at me to run, to leave, to end this another way, but I couldn't, because Cain wasn't just a man anymore. He was a virus, an idea, a belief system that had outgrown its creator. Even if I killed him, even if I destroyed this place, his message would live on. And he knew it. You can't stop me, he whispered. I clenched my fists. Watch me. The final transmission. I didn't hesitate. I reached into my jacket, pulled out the hard drive, and threw it into the main terminal. Cain's eyes flickered with the briefest hint of doubt. And that was all I needed. I hit execute. And the truth flooded the network. Every deepfake. Every algorithm. Every fabricated sermon. We didn't just expose him. We erased him. Live. On every screen. Across every device. The prophet was a lie. The faith shattered in an instant. Cain screamed. An inhuman sound, a noise of pure, wrathful loss, of a man watching his entire world collapse around him. He lunged, too fast, too wild, too desperate. And Iris shot him. Twice. The first bullet took him in the chest. The second took him in the throat. Leonard Cain collapsed at the altar of his own false godhood, choking on blood, on disbelief, on the wreckage of everything he had built. And I watched him die. The cathedral burned behind us as we disappeared into the night. The movement was over. The war was won. But I knew deep down I would never be free. Because once you create a god, you never stop hearing his voice. And sometimes, late at night, when the world is quiet, I still hear Cain's whisper. You thought you could kill God. And I wonder if I ever really did. End.